So I'm going to start the 10th of Tevet in light of Hanukkah. This year doesn't have much to do with the number 7, more maybe with the number 10. This is the 10th day of the 10th month, but let me relate it to Hanukkah, and then we'll get started with what we want to do. When we discuss Hanukkah, we talked about, let me just do a quick mute, if you can. when we discuss Hanukkah, we start with the story of Hanukkah from the time of Adam HaRishon. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah about Adam HaRishon recognizing the winter solstice, and he fasted for 8 days, and then the next year he made a holiday. He fasted for 8 days, saw that days were getting longer, and made a holiday for 8 days. And the next year both became holidays. So Saturnalia, which is the 8 days before the winter solstice, became Hanukkah. We explained, and that's explains the minhag of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel counting up or counting down the candles. And, we didn't have a holiday for the next 8. But it's interesting that 8 days after Hanukkah is over, it happens to be Asar B'Tevet. So just keep that in mind. That's the way of introduction. By the end of the year, we'll try to get to that. Now, what I want to begin with is what we read yesterday in Haftarah, with the story of Yehuda and Yosef. What did Yechezkel say? In order to bring redemption, he takes a piece of wood or an ace, a tree, or a piece of wood, writes on one of them Yehuda, the other Yosef, and the two have to come together to enable the return to Yerushalayim and rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. Now, that tension between Yosef and Yehuda began back in Sefer Bereshit. In fact, that was Parsha Vayigash. Rabbi Jay, did I ever explain to you Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit LeDavid?
When you say ever, like what do you mean?
Like
by
in the last 2 weeks since Chanukah. I'm pretty sure we did. Remind me. If someone has to remind me if we did. If not, I have to show you something amazing. I think it's amazing.
You didn't.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
So if you have a Tanakh open at home or a sitter, open up Tehillim Perek Lamed, which is, here, we have it here. I'm sorry. Okay. First, I want to open up a sitter. That's it. We didn't do it because it's on the source sheet. Because I checked my notes beforehand. I just didn't look at my source sheet. I made a mistake. I made a source sheet a week early this week. That's why I don't remember what's in the source sheet. Usually I make it the morning before. So take a look at Mizmor Lamed, which is a Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit LeDavid. Now, who can tell me why we say that on Hanukkah? Oh, here comes my camera. Look at the, let me share my screen. And I'll get my camera while you're looking at Mizmor. I'll share my screen, and we're going to go to a, you know what, let me use a regular Hebrew Bible. And I'm going to open up Sefer Tehillim. We're going to go to Ketuvim Tehillim Perek Lamed. Most of you know it by heart. Tell me, in this Mizmor, it must have something to do with the Beit HaMikdash, even though there's nothing about the Beit HaMikdash in it. Tell me if there's any lines here that remind you of the story of Yosef and his brothers. Just look at it and write in the chat if you find something.
Yordebor.
Okay. Take 30 seconds of silence. And I want everyone on their own. You can write in the chat if you want. I want people to discover on their own. Yordebor. Okay, we gave that. That's the easiest one. See if there's any other imagery from the story. And now I have a camera. Let's take it. Where's my camera? I thought I had a camera. I kept that and stopped my share. I think to get the camera in. Oh, here's the video. Okay. Ta-dum. That's a little off. There's the camera. Now you see.
We see you. Okay.
There we go.
Welcome. Okay. Welcome in living person. Yeah.
Okay. And that's my cousin's house. There we go. Okay. Now we're back to normal. I have headphones, not to hear this thing. Okay, my connection's good. He has like a super fast connection, so I should be better than Israel now. Okay, so we'll start taking answers. Now I can highlight my screen and everything. So someone mentioned your debor. That makes sense. Anything else? Now we can take. Yeah. Any other nominees? Oh, we have the chat. Oh, wow. Let's look at the chat. It starts filling up. Hafakta mispedi lemaholi. Okay. Oh, Mabetza. Oh, we got them all. Okay. Mabetza Bedami, very good. That's the Yehuda line. And Pitakta Steki, very good. And Bat Mispedim. And we start the Panayafe. Okay, that's fine. Alrighty. Where's Ed? Oh, Ed Winters online. Ed, I just saw your son. I was spoken KMS this morning. So you have a son there. We gave you a package for your grandson. Okay, now, so let's take a look at the Mizmor. We have Yor Debor, also means Sheol. Remember, Yaakov thinks he's going to go Sheolah in this thing. Now, this Mizmor is not about Yosef and his brothers. What's it about? It's about dedicating the Beit HaMikdash. Agreed? That's the topic. Now, but there's imagery here that reminds us of it. And we throw, the main topic here is prayer, isn't it? Someone in trouble turning to God for prayer, and God answers his prayer and saves them from the life-threatening situation. But later we had this phrase, Ma betza bedami, which is exactly Yehuda saying, you know, Ma betza kinaruga tachino v'chitzino et damo. And petakta saki, which petakta saki, okay, petakta saki v'tazoni simcha. When the brothers open up their bags and they find the money inside, the money that Yosef hid in there, what conclusion did they reach? I mean, what does opening up the bags cause them to do?
Remember?
Yeah.
They're frightened.
But more than that, but they see the hand of God. What did they say? Remember, Basot Asa Elohim Lanu. What's God done to us? It, Yosef does something to wake, not just to get them, he wants them to find God behind the events. And that's one of the
they call it an activity. Don't they say Ashemim Anachnu?
They say that they take but they also mention God's name there, don't they? What's the first time they say they're guilty, and the second time they say, you know, God must be behind these events. Now, why was Yehuda called Yehuda? What was the reason for Yehuda's name?
Ode et Hashem.
Look at the last line. So in this mizmor, I see Yehuda, Ma betza bedami, and I see Yosef, Yor Debor, Sheola with Yaakov, and Pitachta Saki, with Yosef and his brothers together. But let me try to explain why. Did David build the Beit HaMikdash or not?
No.
No. Did he want to?
Yes.
Big time he wanted to. Now, why couldn't he? So God told him in Sefer Shmuel, you can't because you have to wait for your son. You have to have a secure dynasty. Your son can build it, not you. In Divrei Hayamim, we have a more detail. And David gets everything ready to build the Mikdash because he wants his son to build it right away. But he explains to his son Shlomo, I couldn't build it because I was living in the time of war. I was at Ish Tamim. And again, we're not going to do the whole shir now, but in a nutshell, David understands that the reason he can't build it is not simply something he did wrong, but he's living in a time period of war, both war with outside enemies and war, internal wars, you know, civil war, and in a time of a lack of unity, in a time of war with other neighbors, you can't go public with an idea of a Mikdash. You have to wait for Shalom B'Sheket, you have what's called Benucha, you have rest from your enemies around you. But even though David can't build it, he wants to make sure his son Shlomo will build it, and therefore he gets all the building materials ready. It's like 10 chapters in Divrei Hayamim dedicated to all the preparation David does to build a Mikdash. And here we see, not only did he get all the building materials ready, he even wrote the music for the dedication ceremony. Now, we saw yesterday in Yechezkel that in order to build the Beit HaMikdash, Yosef and Yehuda have to learn to get along with each other. They have to share their leadership. And that instead of fighting, they have to be united, which is part of the story of Parshat Vayigash. But more than that, when David tells Shlomo, I'm an Ish Tamim, and God told me that, but God didn't tell him that, but rather, he heard that from Shimi ben Gera. When Absalom rebelled against David, and David was running away, if you remember that story, Shimi ben Gera is, you know, throwing rocks at him and cursing him. I joke around, he's saying he was going down Rehob Bar Ilan Street in Geula, you know, leaving Yerushalayim, getting pelted by rocks and being cursed out by his Rebbe. Tzeitze Isha Damim. Now, but when that happens, David's generals, Abishai, you know, his brother, wants to kill the guy. You know, this anti-Zionist. You know, how can you let him do that? What's David say? David says, let him curse me. Let him curse me, because that's not Shimi, that's God. Even though Shimi has bad intentions, David hears the rebuke of God through Shimi. That's in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tetzayin, Shmuel Bet Perek Tetzayin in the story. I don't want, that's a whole shir. I'm just giving a summary of it for a good reason. Because David understands that in order to build a Beit HaMikdash, it's not enough to have peace with your enemies outside. You have to have internal peace. There has to be unity among the tribes and peace with your nations outside. Because otherwise, if other nations don't respect you, you can't make a name for God. And if you yourself aren't acting in a respectful way, you don't want them coming to visit you. And therefore, there's a need. There's a need for unity as a prerequisite, and that was exactly Chesed's point in that Torah we read yesterday about what's necessary to rebuild Yerushalayim. One quick example of that. Let me show you something else in Tanakh about Yosef and Yehuda. Remember, the Mikdash is going to be built in the tribe of Binyamin. If you remember the borders of the tribes in Sefer Yoshua, in chapter 18, when we're dividing up the remaining seven tribes, when we get to the description of the tribe of Yehuda in chapter 18, or the tribe of Binyamin, look how interesting the border of Binyamin is. Okay? In verse 11 in chapter 18, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayal Goral Batei Bnei Binyamin L'Mishpachotam, listen carefully, Vayitze Gvul Goralam Bein Bnei Yehuda Bein Bnei Yosef. No other tribe is described that way. The Gvul Binyamin is between Yehuda and Yosef. Now, remember, Chazal say Binyamin wasn't involved in selling of Yosef. He wasn't part of the rivalry. That's how you can unite the tribes together. Also, Yerushalayim is on the border between Bnei Leah and Bnei Rachel, which is also unifying all the tensions from Sefer Bereshit. Now, in the border, the only border that has the word Katef in it is the border of Binyamin with Yehuda and Binyamin with Ephraim. Why? You have Katef Yericho, and then later you have Katef Luza, and then you have what else is next? There's about five of them here. Kiryat Baal, and then we get to Katef Ben Hinnom. Where's it? There's Katef Ben Hinnom here somewhere. Here we go. Apeginom Masher. Katef Yivusi. I'm sorry, Katef Yivusi, and then Katef Mo Harava. I'm pretty sure like five, six times you have the word Katef. Anyone know why? It's real easy. The Yidid Hashem, the Bracha Tabinyamin, Yishkon Nevetach Alav, Chofef Alav Koyim, Uvein Ketef Av Shechein. Therefore, the Shekhinah is going to dwell within Binyamin. We're in Binyamin, the northern border, the southern border, in the middle. You know, that can vary. But the Shekhinah is Binyamin because Binyamin is going to bring together the tribes. And hence, the Mikdash is going to be Nachla Binyamin. The irony at the end of Sefer Shoftim, where everything's falling apart, is that instead of Binyamin unifying the tribes, all the tribes are unified to go to war against Binyamin. If you learn Sefer Shoftim, it's going to be one of the big, you know, deeper themes behind the book about that story at the end, because it's showing how we've gone rock bottom in our society. For Binyamin, instead of unifying the tribes, they're unifying them for the wrong reason, to lead to a civil war instead of unity. And again, Shmuel and Sefer Shoftim is going to fix that. By the time Shmuel is over, Shmuel begins, or Shoftim ends with that divisiveness in civil war, which sort of continues into the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the corruption of Elim Pinchas. By the time the book is over, we have David ready to build the Beit HaMikdash, and Melachim begins when the Beit HaMikdash is actually built on the border between Binyamin and Yehuda, and between Bnei Rachel and Bnei Leah. So that's the background I wanted to bring about the need for unity and Haftarah from thing. Now, let's go back to the Mizmor I was talking about. Why is that important? Because if David wants to build the Beit HaMikdash and realizes the reason he can't build it is because of his lack of unity, it makes sense in the music that he's composing for the dedication ceremony, he's going to bring up imagery from Yosef and Yehuda. Now, the main thing he's saying is about prayer, because the Beit HaMikdash is a place to pray to God for your needs when you're in trouble. But he's taking that and transposing the story of Yosef and Yosef and his brothers onto that. So I think that imagery is intentional, and it's fitting for singing when you're dedicating a mikdash, which will be a place for prayer, national introspection, to make sure we remember not to have sinat chinam. And we keep that in mind now. That's going to be the background to understand our share today from the beginning of Bayit Sheni and Asar B'Tevet. Okay, so that was part one. Let me just check the chat real fast. Those are the sources. That's wonderful. Okay, now we go to our source sheet and we can get to work. First, the date of Asar B'Tevet. It's everyone knows, probably heard of the four fast days. Asar B'Tevet is the first one chronologically. But what do we have? The first 24 chapters of Sefer Yechezkel are rebuke. If you're just a quick review of the book, 24 chapters of the book are rebuke. After that, in chapters 25 through 35, it's Nevot primarily to the other nations, the rebuke. Chapters 36 and 37 are going to be Nechama, about return to Zion and redemption. 38 and 39 will be Gog and Magog. And then the end of the book are the 40 to 48, the last nine chapters are about the final temple, future temple, and the vision that Yechezkel has about the temple. I did that to show you that the only rebuke in the book are the first 24 chapters. Chapters 1 through 23 all deal with years 5, 6, and 7, when the rebellion begins against Bavel. Year 9 is the final chapter, chapter 24. And basically God's saying in chapter 9, on Asar B'Tevet, what does Yechezkel do? Yechezkel tells the people, write down this day. In the ninth year, on the 10th day of the 10th month, Yechezkel says, write down this day, because mark your calendar. On this very day, what happened? Melech Babel began the siege in Yerushalayim. Now, Yechezkel doesn't have CNN, doesn't have breaking news. No one else knows this. Yechezkel knows it through prophecy. And he has to tell the people to write it down, because Yechezkel has a credibility problem. For good reason. Because all Yechezkel's colleagues, the Tanakh calls them the false prophets, but they're God's prophets. They're Nevi Hashem, they're God's, they're speaking on behalf of God, but saying things that God never said, but it's their wishful thinking. And they're misleading the people. So he's going to give a mashal to the people in a minute. But Yechezkel, God's first message to Yechezkel basically, is that there's no way anyone's going to listen to you because your prophecy is not popular. Because everyone wants to hear that God's going to bring us back to our land. Remember, Yechezkel goes into exile 11 years before the temple is destroyed. It's only destroyed in the 11th year of the exile. Yechezkel's with the people who went to exile with Jehoiachin 11 years earlier. And the community that went into exile felt left out. They want to come back all the time. And there was great hopes they would come back. But the community in Yerushalayim didn't listen to Yirmiyahu and didn't listen to God. They rebelled against the Babylonians. The Babylonians came now to put down the rebellion. The siege of the city began in the tenth month of the ninth year, a year and a half before the Korban. And Yechezkel is saying from here, it's only a matter of time. It's over. And Yechezkel has to tell them that because they need to know that they're the future of the Jewish people. When you're exiled, and most of the nations still remain, that's what happened with Jehoiachin, the people exiled felt, oh, they're the losers. They lost out. And those remaining in Jerusalem with the temple, they're going to be the future of the Jewish people. And the people in exile either want to go back or have given up hope. Yechezkel's job is to explain to them, keep your hopes down. You're not going back. But don't think the future is with the people in Yerushalayim. The future is with you people in Bavel. That's what Yirmiyahu says also in chapter 24 of Yirmiyahu, where what's called the Tenim Arot and Tenim Tovot. He says, the good figs are the people in exile in Bavel, and the bad figs who are going to get ruined are going to get destroyed will be the people in Yerushalayim. So the 10th day of the 10th month marks the beginning of the end. And Yechezkel is saying, because the people rebelled, you're the future. Yechezkel has to be on record because all the other prophets, everyone that's representing God, is saying it won't happen, it can't happen. We're going to return to Jerusalem, we'll defeat the Babylonians. And it didn't happen. And the fear is, once the temple would be destroyed and all the rabbis are saying, all the prophets are saying it won't happen and it does happen, people will lose their faith in God. Therefore, Yechezkel has to be on record. No one wants to hear what he has to say. That's what God tells him at the beginning of the book. Say it, no one's going to listen to you, but say it anyhow. He has to do the craziest things to get PR. He does X-rated Nevuot. He does crazy things. He eats crazy food. He lies down on his side. He makes little models of Jerusalem. He tells stories. He does crazy things to get attention because he has to be on record so we can say when it's over, I told you so. And that's the end of chapter 24 that begins on the Asar B'Tevet. He gives a mashal to the people. The people are saying that Jerusalem will save us. The people are saying Jerusalem is the pot and we're the meat in the pot. And the walls of Jerusalem will save us. It's like the pot saves the meat inside the pot. And God takes that mashal and flips it around and says, you're right. Jerusalem's the pot and you're the meat. but you're going to be overcooked. God says, I'm going to make the fire larger, and instead of Jerusalem saving you, it's going to kill you. And you're going to be a pot that's going to overboil. Now, what's he say at the end? Vata ben Adam. Listen, when the day I take away your source of strength, he's referring to the Beit HaMikdash, the source of tifartam, what you're hoping for, your glory. Everyone was hoping Mahmad and Nehem for this, and Masan of Sham. The temple was the center of all their hopes and of their children. On the day that the palit, the day the refugee comes from the battle of Jerusalem and tells the people in Babylonia, hey, the temple was destroyed. And Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel were right. All the other rabbis were wrong. Bayomahu, on that day, yipetach picha et ha-palit. Then the refugee will enable you. It will give you credibility. And then you can start giving masar. Then you can speak, give them rebuke. And you won't have to be quiet anymore because now they'll listen to you because you've proven yourself. And then you'll be assigned to them and they'll know that God was behind these events. So Yechezkel's job is to be on record because no one listens to him before the Korban. It's inevitable there'll be a Korban because the people rebelled against Babel. They didn't listen. But Yechezkel's job is to pick up the pieces after the Korban. And now when Yechezkel talks about return, oh, here's all the sources from Mizmor Shekhanach Mayda David we talked about. Remember, we had the idea of to dedicate the temple to God. We need not just to know it's a place of prayer, but to know, to learn the message of Tshuva from the story of Yosef and his brothers. A Dli is a pail that you draw water from below and bring up. So I'm going to glorify God and raise him above because he brought me from below. He brought me from below up. I'm going to take him from ground level and raise him God up. You don't have my energy against me. And then we had Yor Debor and we had Matzbet Sabdami and Pitach Tasaki and Lola Modeka. So that was the imagery of Yosef and Yudah, which we have later in Daf Tor we read today, or yesterday, in Parsha Vayigash. Now, why did I bring this up? A, because we have the date of Asar B'Teveh. Oh, we also have the background for Daf Tor we read yesterday, in Parsha Vayigash. But I want to tie this to Hanukkah, because our focus on Hanukkah was the beginning of the Second Temple period, and what went wrong? And the last thing we did on Hanukkah was the Nevuah of Zechariah with the vision of the menorah, and the message of Lo B'Chayav V'Lo B'Koach. Now, remember, all the visions of Zechariah, of chapters 1 through 6, were all in year 2 of Daryavesh. And in years, and everything was on condition that what? That we'll see, we'll take a look at the end in a minute. Let's take a look of, let's open up a regular Tanakh for a minute. Let me stop this year real quick. Open up my Tanakh. Sorry about that. There we go. And where's my Bible? Here we are. If I look at Sefer Zechariah Perek, there's the first six chapters I explained were all from year two of the Yavesh, the year they break ground on the temple. Here's Zechariah, here we go. There's a caveat on these seven prophecies of Zechariah where the menorah is the middle one. What's the caveat? At the end of Perek Vav, because the prophet doesn't say what will be, it's what can be. He says as follows, Urochokim Yavo, verse 15, at the end of the chapter 6, people from far away will come and build this house for God. And then you'll know that God was behind these events, the rise of Babel to power, God was behind your history helping you, that God sent me. Im shamoa tishmu'un b'kol Hashem Elokechem. All this is on the condition that you're going to listen and obey God. If you don't, it's not going to happen. So Zechariah is not saying this will be a final redemption. He's saying it can be a final redemption. Now, the most interesting thing happens now in chapter 7 in Zechariah. It's 2 years later. 2 years later in the book of, in the fourth year of Daryavesh, Vayimashant Arba the Daryavesh, there'll be a delegation coming from Babylonia, coming to ask a question to the rabbis in Jerusalem, the Kohanim and the Kohanim and Nevim in Yerushalayim, asking a question, now that the temple is under construction, do we continue fasting on Tisha B'Av, have Kebah Chodesh HaChamishi? Should I hold myself back like from wine and meat like I've been doing for these last 7 years? We'll see. It means there's been a custom ever since the temple was destroyed to fast on what we call the four fast days. Here we have Tisha B'Av, we'll see more fast days coming up. So let's review quickly the timeline to make sure everyone remembers what's happening. What were the key dates? The first year of Koresh was the Cyrus Declaration. We talked about this, you know, remember from Balfour, from Cyrus to Balfour in detail, but we talked about it Hanukkah briefly, that after the return of the Koresh, there's an 18-year building freeze and everyone's given up hope. And then we explained how Hanukkah was a time of hope. And that's why they broke ground on Hanukkah in year two of Dar Yavesh as a sign of hope in times of darkness. In the book of Ezra, we find out in year six, the construction is completed. That's there. Now, what's going to happen? In the middle between year two and year six is going to be this chapter seven in Zechariah, where the question comes up, now that it's under construction, do we continue fasting or not? Just to review the key points, we've seen this many times. The first chapter of Ezra is the Cyrus Declaration. We have the right to the ability to go back and build the temple. We're not going to read this. We did this. And we have the first Intifada afterwards. That's the 18-year break from Koresh till Daryavesh. There's the building freeze. And now in the second year of Daryavesh, on the 24th of Kislev, we have the groundbreaking ceremony, thanks to Chazai's inspiration that began several months earlier. Let's review what we did Hanukkah time. It's just in your notes to remember the flow of topic. And last week, we talked about the vision of the menorah, of Lo B'chayav V'lo B'koach, and that was the key. And this is in chapter 6 in Zechariah, is the fact that the completion, this was the caveat we had in the end of chapter 6. And then in the book of Ezra, we saw it's finished in year 6. Now comes the fun part, the sad part. They come with a question to the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, let's read it in English Hebrew Tanakh. It'll make it a lot easier if you want to follow in English. Where are we? We have to share our screen and open up in English Hebrew Tanakh. Right up here. He had one open. There we go, Hebrew, English. I think you see my screen, yeah. And we'll do a mute. We'll open up the book of Zechariah. And listen to this famous question, chapter 7. The big question was, now that the temple is being built, do we continue fasting? Now, let me stop the screen here for just 1 second. There's two ways to understand their question. It could be that they know for sure that the temple is being built, and now that it's being built and almost finished, do we continue fasting? Or are they asking, assuming if it is finished, we won't fast, is it really happening? In other words, are they asking, now that it's built, do we continue fasting, even though it's built? Or are they asking, for sure, if it's built, we won't fast, but is this really happening? We've been upset so many times, there were so many building freezes and disappointments beforehand, they want to know, is this the real thing or not? Is it really Rishis Mechat Gulatenu? We'll follow both possibilities as we go through. Now, what everyone is assuming is the reason we're fasting is to remember what happened. But the point I want to make, which is the only take-home message of the shir, is that fast days aren't to remember what happened, but to remember why it happened. I mean, the people when they instituted the fast days weren't just doing it. When the rabbis instituted fast days to remember the destruction, wasn't just to remember an historical event, a disaster, a tragedy that happened to our people, but rather remembering why it happened. And should we have the opportunity to return one day, we want to make sure it won't happen again. We have to understand why it was destroyed so we know to make sure it won't happen again, should it be rebuilt. Therefore, when the people come and ask Hari this question, now we can go back to our English Hebrew Tanakh. When they ask the Kohanim and Levim, this delegation from Bavel, ask the Kohanim and Levim, do we continue fasting and crying in the fifth month? God gives, through the Navi, a sarcastic answer. What's he say? He says, go tell the people, when you've been fasting for the last 70 years, have I been fasting? And so when you eat, do I tell you when to eat and when to drink? Basically, God's saying, don't ask me the Rabbanans, ask me the Oraita. You decided to fast, that's up to you. If you want to fast, if you want to eat, that's your problem. I didn't command you in the Torah to fast, but what did I command you? Halot ha-dvarim, all the words, all the rebuke that I gave you before the temple was destroyed. Which the temple didn't have to be destroyed. Your behavior causes destruction. And if you're fasting, remember what happened, okay, so it's being built. If you're fasting, remember why it happened, then the fast days are going to be a time to remember why it happened. And therefore, what does God want you to do? If you want to fast to remember, that's up to you. But what's the main thing you need to do? Read Yeshayahu, read Yirmiyahu, read all the Nevi'im who predicted destruction and what was possible to stop the destruction. So he says, what does God want you to do on these fast days is not just to fast, but to remember what was the reason for being destroyed, as explained by the earlier prophets, what they call Nevi'im Rishonim, we call Nevi'im Achronim. And in case people forgot why the first temple was destroyed, so Zechariah quotes from Yirmiyahu and from Yishayahu. Zechariah says, Kol Ma'ashem Svot. What you need to do, and what needed to be done before the first temple was destroyed, was Mishpat and Mitzvotu. Judge the people with truth. Chesed v'rachamim asu ishatachiv. People should be with kindness and mercy to one another. Look at the phrase ishatachiv. Reminds us of Yosef and his brothers. Don't oppress the stranger, the orphan, the widow, and the poor, and the destitute. And listen carefully. Don't think evil about your brother. Don't always, what I call, play the Sinat Chinam game. There's always good reasons for baseless hatred. Don't play that game. Don't say, what's he up to? What's that up to? Don't assume everyone else is bad and only you're right. Give people the benefit of the doubt. Respect their opinions. And don't build a society where everyone's fighting all the time over who's right and who's wrong. You can argue maturely, but not to the point of hating people and lying and cheating to promote your approach. The people didn't listen to the Navi, they put up a cold shoulder, and therefore God brought down the first temple. They didn't listen to the words of the Torah that the Navim told them, and God got angry, and therefore when they called out to me, I didn't answer your cry, because when I called out to you, you didn't answer my cry. That was chapter 7. And chapter 8, Zechariah says, now that you're coming back and the temple is under construction, what do you need to do to make sure this is going to work? It says, Komar Shem, God says, I'm zealous now to return to Zion and build it. God says, Shafti El Tzion, I'm returning to Zion. And Jerusalem will be called a city of truth, and God's mountain, a city of holiness. Now, God can bring the Shekhinah back to Yerushalayim, but God can't make Yerushalayim a city of truth. The way I understand this, and we'll prove it as we go on, God's saying, I'm willing to bring my Shekhinah back. That was Zechariah said earlier, God wants the Shekhinah to return. He wants the people to now be able to represent them as a nation. But on what condition? Jerusalem has to be known as a city of truth, not a city of strife. He says, the time will come, remember, there'll be old people sitting on the parks watching little children playing. Baruch Hashem, we've reached that today. And then he continues as follows. Pasuk Zayin. Kol Ma'ashem Tzvot. Hini Moshti Et Ami Meretz Mizrach Meretz Mevoa Shemesh. I'm redeeming my people from east and west. I'm going to bring them. They'll dwell in Jerusalem. They'll be my people, but I'll be their God. On what condition? That you do emet and staka. I'm trying to show you, and Zechariah will say this explicitly very soon. He's saying, I'm doing everything I can, God's saying. I brought in the Persians defeating the Babylonians. I brought Darius down to power and giving you an opportunity to rebuild. But there's only so much I can do. If you want redemption to be complete, you have to do your side. And you have to build a society that's worthy of representing God. Then he gives a more chizuk, he quotes from Haggai, about the improving economy and things will be better now. And he says as follows. Pasuk Yedalim. Kol Ma'ashem Tzvot. This is the word of God. Just like I plotted, Kashir Zamanti La'ra Lechem, Batsif Avotech Ometi, Ma'ashem Lod Nechamti. Just like God said, just like I plotted, and I brought in the Babylonians to punish you when you made me angry. Okay? And I didn't change, I didn't listen to your prayers, and I brought down the first temple because you didn't listen to the rebuke of the Nevi'im. King Shafti Zamanti B'yamim Ela. Now I'm plotting and planning nowadays to do good for you. Let Tivat Yerushalayim, to help rebuild Jerusalem and the house of Yehuda. Don't be afraid of taking initiative. God's with you. But redemption is a two-way street. And now what I was alluding to before is now explicit. God, what can God do? God can bring Darius into power. He can bring the Persians. He can defeat the Babylonians. He can tell the international events. He can give us the opportunity. What we need to do is Eila Dvar Mesher Tasu. Here's what we need to do. And here he goes again. Dabru Emet, Ishet Re'eu. Emet Mishpat Shalom Shiftu Basharechem. Build a society known for its truth, for its justice, and people getting along with one another. Look how prominent this idea of unity is. Don't even think what this one's up to. Don't put those thoughts in your mind. Don't think so negative about others. And don't swear falsely, even though you might think there's a good reason to do so. And don't love doing that, because that's what God hates. Now, of all the mitzvot that God talks about, notice how central the idea of unity is, and not sinat chinam, and doing justice and righteousness, and not lying. It's almost the key message from the story of Yosef and his brothers. So I'm trying to use what I hope you understand why I went to Yecheskel first. If you want to understand what Asar B'Tevet is about, which was the beginning of the end, and if we're fasting on Asar B'Tevet, remember why God destroyed the temple. Remember, if the four fast days are commemorating its destruction, not just what happened, but why it happened, the first fast day is a seminal event that began and marked the beginning of the destruction. This day began the siege, then it's only a matter of time. Now, what the Navi is saying, if you're fasting, you're not just fasting, oh, to remember something that happened. The purpose of the fast day is to reflect, to pray, and remember why it was destroyed. And that has to be a transformative understanding that will make you a better nation and a better people. And that's what God's up to. You know, that's the message Chai has to give the people. And therefore, you don't ask the prophet, is this, you know, when the question comes up, is this redemption? The answer isn't, don't ask God, ask yourselves. God can give you the opportunity for redemption. It's what can be, but you have to do your side to live up to it. And that's why Zachariah's message here, which is the beginning of Beit Sheni, is just as meaningful nowadays, that you can recognize this is the beginning of a redemption process. You can recognize God's giving you opportunity, but the main thing God needs is not belief, oh, that this is the final redemption, but the understanding that it can be the final redemption, but it's dependent on our behavior if it'll happen. I think that's a much more important religious message than having belief that this is Rishi Simcha Kulotenu. It's not a question who's right and who's wrong. You know, is this the final redemption or not? It's the understanding it can be, but it's incumbent upon us to make it happen. And these are the things that we need to do. These have to be central in our society, in our return to Zion. Now, if the theme of Sinat Chinam is one of the underlying themes of Yosef and his brothers, of the story of Yosef and his brothers, and if that's a prerequisite to get over that, to be able to build the Beit HaMikdash, as we saw in Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit David, God, you know, giving a reason why David can't build, but why his son will build, then it makes a lot of sense why the Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit David brings up imagery from Yosef and his brothers, because the Mikdash has to be the tikkun, the way of fixing that. Now, for the end of the share, I want to show you how Zachar enters Nevuah. So what does a Navi do, like a good Navi? The people come with a sort of myopic question. There's this big historical process going on. What's happening? God's redeeming his people. We've been waiting for this for so many years. God did everything he can do, and he's expecting his people to come back and return to Israel and become his nation. What are they asking? What's the nafkamina? Oh, do we have to fast or not? If I take a modern day analogy, what's so important about the gula process? Do we fasting? When we're planning summer camp, do we do instructional swimming or regular swimming during the 9 days? Do we have to have assumed tzitzlishik or not? Meaning, it's a very myopic understanding of the meaning of redemption. Oh, now we don't have to fast on the fast days. They're missing the big picture. God's saying, I'm doing all these things. I want you to come. And I want you to build. It's not just, I need you to make aliyah. I need you to build, for those who make aliyah, I need to build a society that sanctifies God that's worthy of the temple. Now, let's go back to our source sheet. I read the sources in the English Hebrew. Now I want to go back and review it on our source sheet, which is just in Hebrew. So we had remembered God to see the fast, but he wants you to do what the early Nevi'im said to do. Okay. And then we had the reminder of what caused the temple to be destroyed. That was, about justice and righteousness in society. Then we talked about redemption being a two-way street. And here's what you need to do in Shalom. Okay. Now comes after taking the opportunity to give the people rebuke for asking a too myopic a question, too narrow-minded question, instead of seeing the big picture. Now he gives an amazing prophecy. What's how you say now in Perek? In the end of Perechet, in Pasuk, Yotchet. No, Rabbi, so do we fast or don't we fast? Vaydvar Hashem Svot Elai Lemor. Kol Amar Hashem Svot. Soma Revi'i, Vetsoma Chamishi, Vetsoma Shvi, Vetsoma Siri. The famous four fast days. The fourth month is Shiva Sabbatamus, when they breach the walls. Soma Chamishi, that's going to be in the month, in the fifth month, that's Tishabav. Soma Shvi is Tum Gedaya, which is 2 months after the Korban. And Soma Siri is the Sarbat Tebet. We're going in calendar order of the months, but not historical order. Because historically, Tzom Asiri would be the first one, and then the other three. So what's he say? Those fast days, not only won't they be fast days, but they're going to become holidays. Got it? On what condition? That you love Emet V'Shalom. If you love Emet V'Shalom, then the fast days can become holidays. So what God's saying is, if you want to fast to remember why it happened, that's great. But once you do that, the fast days become holidays. And what's interesting, I understand why they're not fast days. If I've internalized not only what happened, but why they happened, then there's no reason to fast, but why feast? So all these holidays, all these fast days have potential holidays built into them. What are they? Soma Rivi, Shiva Sabbatamos, and Chumash is the day that, what happened? The day that Moshe came down with the second, with the first Luchot. We sinned at the same time with the sin of the golden calf, but had we not sinned, that would have been the day of Matan Torah. That would have been the day that we got the first Luchot. And all the laws that Moshe received on the first 40 days in Har Sinai. So I'll call that Simchat Torah, maybe. Okay. So Machamishi on Tisha B'Av, if I follow the calendar in Chumash, Tisha B'Av, if you do the calculation, is the date the spies came back. And had we not sinned with the spies, had we been more motivated, that day we would have listened to the spies saying, let's go and conquer it. Had we listened to Caleb and Yeshua, and we would have begun our conquest of the land of Israel on that day, called that Yom HaTzmaut. Independence Day, sort of. Tzom HaShvi'i, Tzom Gedaliah is already a holiday. That's Rosh Hashanah. Remember, it happened on Rosh Hashanah, but we put it off every year because we can't fast on Rosh Hashanah. But Tzom Gedaliah already is a holiday. That's Rosh Hashanah, which leaves us with Asar B'Tebet. What's the holiday? And that's our connection to Hanukkah. We go back to how we began today's shir with the story of Adam HaRishon. Maybe this is a type of winter solstice holiday where I'm remembering not only on the date, this is the date that the whole siege began at the beginning of the end, but when you're in exile and you're down and depressed, the beginning of redemption is recognizing there can be redemption. And that was the whole thing we talked about, that I'll give you an example from Rosh Chodesh. There's cycles in life, and sometimes people are down and depressed and give up hope, but you have to know no matter how bad things are, there's always recovery. The thing we talked about over and over again in the Hanukkah Shiurim. And now, not only every month when there's a new moon, I remember this idea that I can have a new start. You know, I talk about Rosh Chodeshim, our time of Zikaron, and a time of Kapara. Kapara means God's giving you a chance to erase an old slate and start from new. But just like Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of a new moon every month, the end of the winter solstice, by the 10th day of the month already, it's not just beginning to get bright, the moon is almost full. And we have lots of light at night now from the 10th day on. And the days start getting longer and there's more sunlight during the day. So it could be that Tzom HaSiri is going to be a holiday because it's the beginning of a new, like a new chapter of the year, but also like a new time in Jewish history. So that might be the potential holiday of Asar B'Tebet, meaning one of, I'll call it a winter solstice holiday, and doing it again the proper way. Now, the Zechariah ends his Nevoah. I think that's the end of my source sheet also, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Zechariah ends with the following Nevoah. What does he say? Not only will the fast day become holidays, God says that a time will come when not only Jews will come to Jerusalem to ask questions about the Mikdash, the Jews will return to Jerusalem and Israel and build a just society. And then people will come from other nations. What will happen? It won't be Jews in Babylonia coming to ask questions about fasting on Tisha B'Av or not, but rather non-Jews will come to turn for God, looking for guidance from God, looking for God's instructions, how to live their life, how to lead their lives. And they'll come to Yerushalayim because to turn to God and to God's people for guidance. That's a much greater ideal than what was happening in the beginning by Cheney. And then God says, you know, at that time, what will happen? There'll be 10 people waiting in line for the audience of an Ishiyudi to give them guidance about how to live a life of godliness. Now, that's a very lofty goal. We won't do this now, but this is the background to understand the sarcasm or the satire in Megillat Esther, where this Ishiyudi should be in Yerushalayim, temple in Yerushalayim, in Shushan HaBira, making a name for God. Instead, the Ishiyudi is in Shushan HaBira, making a name for Marduk or the Babylonian God. Or maybe not doing it, but his name represents that idea. But that's a Purim share. Maybe we'll do it later in the year. So that was my, that's what I want to share with you. Of, in light of the things we saw of Hanukkah, of Zacharias Nevuah, of Lo B'Chayav V'Lo B'Koach, in the beginning of Beit Sheni, if we want something to think about on Asar B'Tevet, on fast days, we're not remembering what happened, but why it happened. And if we're living in a generation and a hashkafa of Reshit Tzmichat Geulateinu, most of our shows we say that every week, then it's important that it's not, oh, we have to believe that this is the final redemption. We have to understand it can be. We have to thank God for the opportunity, but we have to live up to that opportunity. And the main thing is, what do we have to focus on? I think Ishari gives us a good idea of what we have to prioritize. And again, there's always good reasons to fight and argue over things. But if you can argue maturely, but work together and see others, not as enemies, but as partners, and build and help build a just society, and not in the name of God lie, cheat, you know, make up stories and cause arguments. I think that's something, hopefully, that's what the Nevi'im are talking about, and hopefully that's something we can bring into our lives today. Okay. Anyway, I have to go. I have to go in a couple of minutes. I'll take 1 minute for questions. Anything on the chat? Tisha was relatively a lot easier than before. I try to keep it simple as possible. But that was the that's the famous four fast days of Zacharias. And it's real simple, but if you follow all the Haftarot that we read on the fast days, on Yom Kippur, we read from Yeshayahu about how the main thing, God, fast days are important, but they're important because, again, not to remember what happened, but why they happened. It's a time for introspection. Hopefully those ideas are something that fast days we can use for. And that's what if we're going to rebuild a temple, that's why Mizmor HaBayit LeDavid is not about constructing the temple, but being worthy of a temple, but also the temple of a place to learn from your mistakes. And that's why Pitach Tesaki, if opening up their socks causes them to do introspect and say, what's God done to us? And but we're guilty, and try to fix the situation, learn from the mistakes. That's what prayer is about. Not just praying God for our needs, but praying to remember we have to be deserving of God's help and to learn from our mistakes. And that hopefully will be something we can focus on the fast days.
Thank you. Are you okay? Back in Israel next week?
No, yeah, I'm flying back, but I'm leaving now to the airport.
Okay. Knesia Tova. Okay, everybody. Well, thank you very much.
Jay, continue with the announcements. I have to cut off.
Yeah, Grunko, okay. You don't want to miss your flight. Yeah, you'll get four seats on the way back. Nobody's allowed in. They're not Israelis. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
I'm behind all those laws. That's like,
be well. Yeah. Okay. Be well. Bye-bye. Okay. Next year, tomorrow night, Mark Shapiro, either it is or it isn't the last of our 16-part series now on Shaul Lieberman and related fields for those who come. Mark says it is. We're taking bets whether he'll have one more after this. Okay, that's tomorrow night at 8:30. Tuesday, we got a doubleheader. Rachel Danziger, Shransi's finishing up her series on Genesis and relationships, and Jeremy Diamond, part 2 of 3 of Science in the Torah. And then Wednesday, of course, Dr. Sokolow. Thursday's Parsha Shear is Bram Weinberg from Camp Mill, actually, where Rabbi Liebtag was this morning. And then my Shear Friday morning on the Siddur at 9 a.m. Okay. And as I've mentioned, we're planning ahead. I know it's a little, we only have like 7 or 8 shearing this week. I'm sorry to disappoint people from our usual, 10, 11, but we're working, towards our winter planning. The series have come to an end. Please God, we'll be starting with a bunch of new series come January, and a few more stuff up our sleeves. We'll keep you posted, and everybody have a wonderful day, wonderful week, and okay, all good things, and invite a friend. I mean it seriously. That's our best form of advertising, and like I say, now's the time. If you have any speakers you'd like to recommend for a one-time partnership or for a little bit of a longer series, please feel free to do so. And okay, look forward to learning with you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Ciao, ciao.